Hey, it's Brian. Looking for an angle into the sports industry? The sports industry increasingly utilizes mental health professionals to help athletes achieve their maximum potential. Are you ready to take the lead and help the athletes you work with become the best they can be? If so, an advanced degree in sport and performance psychology from University of Western States may be for you. Highlights of the UWS Sport and Performance Psychology program include teaching the process of setting and attaining high-level achievements, creating and leading a highly effective team, and positive motivation, effective communication skills. UWS offers affordable master's and doctoral degrees that can be completed online and on your own time. Take the lead in helping athletes and teams bring home that next championship. A degree in sports and performance psychology is the next step in your athletic leadership career. Visit uws.edu/take the lead for more information. One more time, uws.edu/take the lead. And the Work in Sports podcast is brought to you by the Work in Sports Academy. About 20 times a week, I get questions from people like, how can I build a resume to highlight my skills? How do I build my network of contacts? How do I stand out for the right reasons? How do I gain experience when I don't have tons of time? If you are listening right now, you respect my thoughts, opinions, and experience. And I thank you for that from the bottom of my heart. I love helping you all. I love doing this podcast. I love sharing advice and information. And that's exactly why I created the Work in Sports Academy. All of my best ideas fit into online courses that you can manage and take at your own pace, at your own time, in your own way, organized for exactly what you need. All of these questions and more are answered and handled by me in these courses. Check out workinsports.com/academy to learn more and sign up for one of our classes. Trust me, you're not going to regret it. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition,
liftoff. Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning for WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports podcast. It is always my goal to avoid extremely topical discussions. Right. The reason is because I want this podcast I'm recording today to be just as relevant in a year as it is right now, the day I post it. I mean, if I talk about the Browns and Rams game last night or the impact of Team USA failing at the World Cup, these things become out of date and are no longer relevant in a short time. Nobody's going to go back and listen to a recap of the Browns and Rams game or some specific news item from today. But the stuff I'm talking about and stuff I'm teaching and training lasts. Right. So you can listen to any podcast we've made in the first 2 years. We got 210 episodes, something like that. 214, maybe. I don't know. I lose track. Any one of them is just as relevant today as it was the day I published it. And that's always been my goal. So if you're a new listener, know that every episode is still worth listening to. The content has meaningful and relevant ideas about working in the sports industry. Now, I give that preamble because before I get into today's question, I'm going to talk about something kind of topical. Something happening right now, but it kind of, even a year from now, I think it's still going to have some level of relevance because we all deal with this as fans. Antonio Brown. As most of you know, I am from Boston. Been a Patriots, Celtics, Bruins, and Red Sox fan for life. Not because of success, rather because of failure. I mean, I sat through miserable seasons. Look back in the history books, not all these teams were always this good. And I relish in all that is great now. But I've had a major problem with the Antonio Brown saga as it relates to my fandom. There's a lot of questions I needed to ask myself as you go through this. Here's the thing. I believe very much in the spirit and sanctity of the locker room. Okay. This is something that is one of my principles in my sports world, my entire career, my life. The locker room is a sacred place. As an athlete playing, or as a media member trying to get in there to talk to players, or just watching from afar, I know the special relationships that happen in that place. It's a family, a unique bond between men and women or whoever's in the locker room, which should be the safest emotional place in the world for athletes. So even dating back to way, way, way prior to everything we know right now about Antonio Brown, when he went live on Facebook from the Steelers locker room, this was 2-3 years ago now, against the team rules, immediately I was like, off that guy. All right. I was like, I don't care how talented he is. I don't care what he does out there. That to me was the backbreaking moment. I just could not stand it. I could not get past it. I couldn't believe somebody would ruin that sanctity and betray all of his teammates in that way. I love elite athletes, and I'll apologize for some misbehavior. I will look past it and give second chances. But this broke like every rule of being a good teammate. And that to me was enough to say, nah, don't like this guy. Don't respect where his head's at. Don't like where he's going. This was way back, okay? Watching from afar, now as he had his issues continue with the Steelers, get worse, and then on to the Raiders, I thought many times throughout this drama, thank God he's not on my team. I would not want this guy on my team. And then it happened. They signed him. And I listened to fans and media types alike twist themselves into pretzels to figure out a way to make it okay now because he's on our team. I hate this attitude. I hate it. It drives me insane. If Antonio Brown had left the Raiders and signed with the Chiefs, every Boston sports fan would be livid. They'd be criticizing him. They'd be criticizing his every action. And this is before all the sexual assault allegations and the rape allegations and all the other things that have happened since. I'm saying in that moment, we would have criticized it. Every fan, if they come to your team, is willing to turn a blind eye. And that's just not right. That's crap. And then it got worse. They signed him and it got worse. I was upset day one. I am not kidding you. And then it got worse. Sexual assault and rape allegations, not paying people who had worked for him, general disrespect of his fellow man. I literally, for the first time in my 44 years, didn't want to support my team. I kind of felt over it. Other things started to seem more appealing to me than cheering on this guy. I really did. I sat back and I thought, I cannot look at him and say, well, it's okay now because he plays for my team. That is fraudulent. That is hypocritical. That is wrong. My team had a chance to say, hey, we've learned this new stuff about you since we signed you. We're not going to play you as we investigate what happened here. They could have even given him cover and said, he's a little banged up. He's a little injured. We're not going to play him this weekend. Or said he wasn't ready to participate in the offense yet and just sat him against the Dolphins. But they didn't. They trotted him out there in their jersey, out to practice every day, representing their brand and their team. Then they played him against the Dolphins, and it all just felt icky. I watched as all these catches start happening and the touchdowns, and I'm like, I don't feel good about this. Now, of course, everyone deserves the right to be innocent until proven otherwise. I'm not saying that. There's probably hundreds of you right now that are listening and saying to yourself, you don't know. You don't know any of this stuff. You don't know what he really did. You don't know if it's true. You don't know if it's somebody going after the money. Of course, nothing has been proven about him. But again, I didn't like his comportment as a teammate before the alleged sexual assaults, rape, and other crimes. And it didn't change when those things came out as well. And let's not forget, this is the same guy who tossed furniture from the balcony of his 14-story apartment just last April, nearly killing a 22-month-old toddler. These are not the actions of a good person. There are consequences for your actions. You become conflicted as a fan. Do I forgive and forget because they give my team a better chance of winning? I'm sorry, I can't do that anymore. For the first time ever, this scenario made me question being a sports fan, where we perceive winning is more important than being good. Yes, I am naive. Yes, this has been happening quite literally since the dawn of sports time. These aren't Boy Scouts, they are flawed humans, I get it. Something felt different this time around. Maybe it's on the heels of the Tyreek Hill situation here too, hurting his kid allegedly, and then getting a contract extension. It just feels wrong. To give some context here, I love the Josh Gordon story. Couldn't cheer for that guy to turn around his life anymore. These are different issues completely. Tom Brady was speaking today, and again, I know I'm dating this with some of this information, but I respect his approach. Okay, for those of you that haven't heard it yet, he was on the sports radio this morning and he was asked about Antonio. And I'll paraphrase a little bit here. And he says things about, like, I care deeply about my teammates. I've had a lot of teammates over the years. You invest not just your head, but your heart. You invest your soul. This is all great. I love that. He says it makes it a great brotherhood. The endearing thing about sports is the relationships I get to build because they're very meaningful. That's the heart philosophically of my life. I mean, these are all things that I agree with. And matter of fact, that's exactly why I felt like him doing the Facebook Live from the Steelers locker room was the first strike against him to say, no, you're breaking everything that makes being a teammate so great. Okay. Brady continues. There's a lot of things. Okay, so I think it brings us all together in so many ways, being from different backgrounds. He's talking about there are a lot of things that get in the way of that. I think we're in a culture where people want to cast judgment quickly on people. We want to disparage people so quickly. And it just speaks to me that a lot of people are probably hurting because when you're not feeling great, you want other people to know that. I think it becomes very emotional. I believe the more you care for people, the more you love people, the more you find joy in your life, the better our society is, the better our communities are, the better our teams are, the better our families are. That's how I feel. Okay, let's summarize this really quickly. I don't disagree with anything he's saying in a vacuum. Of course, love and tolerance and acceptance and all those things are vital to our society and our ways. I love his optimism. But you also have to think of the person on the other side of these controversies. Think of the woman who he threatened after she came forward, sharing pictures of her kids. Concluding there are good people on both sides of this isn't being intellectually honest. He's a multimillionaire who allegedly used his power to affect the livelihoods and health of others. There needs to be consequences. And yes, the more you care for people and the more you, you know, love people and all of that is so, so, so important. But it also doesn't mean you allow them to get away with anything. Antonio Brown does not have a job right now. The intimidating text messages to one of his accusers was the enough is enough moment for the Patriots after 11 days. But it shouldn't have gotten there. I'm happy it did. I felt a sense of relief when they cut him. But none of this feels right. I guess my point in all this is don't turn a blind eye to what is right or wrong because someone is wearing your favorite jersey. Ask yourself, how would you feel if that same exact person played for your rival instead of your team? If those two things don't add up, then you have to question where your head is. All right, I had to get that off my chest. On to today's question. This comes from Charles Roberts, a member of our Facebook group. Charles posted this in our private Facebook group. For those of you that don't know, go to Facebook, search for the Work and Sports Podcast. We have a private group and some great conversations happen there that are all very sports career focused. I started to type a response to Charles' question. He got a lot of responses out there. A lot of great people giving great advice. And I thought about typing something up for him as well, but thought, you know what? This is actually the exact right thing we should be talking about on the podcast. Here we go. This is Charles' question. Hey guys, I'm not trying to be negative, but just need to vent to people who understand where I'm coming from. The quest to get into the sports field is so frustrating. Even having a master's and halfway through a PhD program, still can't even land an interview or time a day from collegiate or professional organizations. After 5 years, the countless no's without one interview request, I'm just wondering if it's even worth the time and energy anymore. Does anyone have any suggestions or tips? I'm down to try anything at this point. Okay, so before we get into it, lots of great responses came into people from the group. Some were aligned with Charles, having the same problems. Others had ideas to help. And some people were just flat out negative, which happens. Let's make some ground rules before we get into this conversation, because I think this is a very all-encompassing conversation. Some ground rules. I'm not going to give you any fluff. Okay. There's not going to be any, you know, you need to take some time for yourself. You need to meditate. Go have a spa day. Take your mind off of it. Go for ice cream. You know, none of that stuff. Okay. Those things don't help you pay the bills. And that's where your frustration is right now. You want your career to start going so everything else can start to fall into line. I get it. When you're job searching and not having the results you want, it affects your mental well-being and feelings of self-worth. So let's get real and let's get a little bit dirty. Okay. Actually, I had a whole outline of things I wanted to say, and I'm throwing a audible here. I want to throw in one other thing before I get into all my other notes, because I have a lot that goes through my head on this kind of conversation. Number one, Charles is in, and this is irrelevant to anybody, but Charles is in Mississippi. And even if you're applying, and this is, again, everybody needs to hear this. If you are applying for jobs in outside of your region, if outside of your area, you will initially, when somebody sees your resume, even if you're the most qualified, they're going to look for people that are closer to first. And the reason is because they have to spend budget on relocating somebody, and it would be much easier if they could find somebody with the same skill set who is close by. They can start faster. There's no extra red tape. There's no relocation. There's no extra time that it takes. You know, it can just happen a lot easier. So if you're not finding the opportunities in Mississippi, you sometimes have to, or wherever you are, you sometimes have to figure out a way to put it into your cover letter or put it into your information saying something along the lines of relocation would not be an issue. You know, so you have to say it better than that, but you need to make them understand that, listen, this isn't going to be a holdup. I am ready to go where I need to go. I'm ready to do what I need to do. And sometimes even come right out and say, I am not going to ask or request any relocation money. Okay, just to set them at ease a little bit. That is a technique you can do. Some people will tell you, don't ever do that. Don't give up that leverage or whatever. If you're struggling at this point where it's taken you years to get responses, you need to pull back what you think some is stopping you. And for some people, if you're in Mississippi and you apply for a job in Michigan, they look at that and say, that's time and money that we're gonna have to spend to get this person here. And if you tell them, I will relocate myself, it's not gonna be on you, and relocation will not be an issue, I am ready to go, or whatever, however you wanna phrase it, take some of those barriers down that might prevent them from taking you seriously. Okay, I wanna get into the rest of the stuff on my list of notes. This is the part that really jumped out to me. 5 years and countless no's. Okay. You say something like that and, or, you know, 5 years of applying for jobs, no bites, no interviews, no whatever. You hear something like that and you say something like that and you're like, okay, this industry stinks. There's no opportunities. There's blah, 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 all that. I'm going to flip this around. Charles, something's not working here. Okay. Something in your approach, your resume, your cover letter, your networking, you need to do a deep dive on you. And again, I said, we're going to get dirty in this talk. I'm not criticizing Charles. This is just what needs to happen if we're going to break out of this 5 years of doldrums. Okay. So I want you to figure this out right now. Ask yourself, what is your ideal position? And do not say anything in sports. I'm willing to do anything. And don't say college athletics. You need to get specific. You don't want to get generic and blend in right now. We're at a point where you need to really figure this out. Who are you, right? What do you want? What are you skilled for? Where do your current skills fit in the industry? These are the questions you need to be asking yourself. What are your ideal roles? Because if you're going about this in a manner where it's like, I'm going to get my master's, I'm going to get my PhD, I'm going to work in college sports, that's all very generic. What do you have right now, skill-wise, that are needed in the industry? What does an employer get when they hire you? And I don't want soft skills like, he's a great guy, I'm a leader, I'm organized, I work hard. What skills do you bring to the table? Okay. That's often the problem that I have with some master's programs and some PhD programs, that they have become all very theoretical based. There are a lot of programs that are very experiential that deal with, you know, getting hands dirty in the industry. Those are great. You should have very specific skills then. And if you do, you need to match those to the industry, to the roles in the industry. If you have these 10 skills, What jobs require those 10 skills? Where is your best possible opportunity? You need to put some legwork into this to figure out where your ideal matches are. Okay. Now, look, I know this sounds like it sometimes. I'm not anti-masters or anti-PhD, but you have to make these choices with intention. I know it's a little late for you, Charles, because you're already in these programs or did it, but this is for everybody out there. You have to make these choices with intention. Okay. So have you been told to do your dream role, you need a PhD or a master's? I mean, if you don't, what are you doing? If you wanted to work in the sports media and you looked at 50 different jobs in sports media, none of them said master's preferred or master's required, why would you go to master's? Again, there are very specific things a master's trains you for, which are fantastic. If it's needed for what you want to do, do it. But if not, then you're kind of wasting your own time and money. So, for example, if you identify, I want to be an athletic director at a major college. That's why I said that first. What is your ideal position, right? Once you identify that, let's say I'm going to go down this road of athletic director, assistant athletic director, whatever. Just play this out, okay? If you've said that to yourself, I want to be an athletic director at a major college, Well, that's your dream. Have you done the research to identify 15 to 20 athletic directors at major colleges? And do you know that a master's or a PhD is needed for it? You might find out, yes, I need at least my master's. All 20 of these people say they have their master's and they ascended to the role I want to be in. Great. There's your data forcing your decision. Your data is telling you, this is what I need to do in order to get to this role that I want to be in. So you need to identify yourself. You need to identify where you want to be, specific as possible, and then find out what's necessary to get there. Look for data paths. No more, what do you want to do? You need to look to, and here's the really good trick, okay? You basically have access to 5 million people's, or more than that. I think it's like 550 million people's resumes who make them public on LinkedIn. So no matter what you want to do, whatever that role is, look to LinkedIn for answers of how others got those roles. So again, I went to LinkedIn. I typed in assistant athletic director. So let's say, just play this out, role playing, Charles. That's what you want to be. You went and got your master's because you knew you wanted to be an athletic director. I'm just telling this story. I don't know who you want to be, but that's how you determine yourself in the early stages here. I want to be an assistant athletic director. Okay. So I'll go to LinkedIn and I type in assistant athletic director. You know what I got? I got back about 17 pages of assistant athletic directors from colleges, big, small, middle, whatever, all across the nation. And you click on somebody's name and guess what you see? You see their entire resume, their entire education, everything about them. So you can go through and see, okay, they're an assistant athletic director now, but where did they start out? Oh, wow, look at that. They started out in minor league baseball. They started out over here. They started out in sales. They started out in marketing. They started out over this way. They have their PhD. They have their master's. You start to see the pathways that people have gotten to the role you want to be in. So you might find new openings you never would have considered before, roles that you could look into that still get you on the path to your ultimate goal. Do that 15 or 20 times, and you're going to start to see patterns repeat themselves. Wow, 10 of these people started out in sales in minor league baseball, and then they went to a college after that, and then they went here after that. Oh, wow, I see the path now. I see how I can get to where I want to go. Starting point matters. Look for those data paths. Look at their resume and how they got there. You know, where did they start? What kind of education do they have? All those details matter. Now, going one step further, I am a skills hound. I believe very much in skills, hard skills. What can you do? Employers care more about your skill and experience than they do your degrees, period. Period. Some will have it as a benchmark. You have to have your master's to be working here. Fine. Check that box. I get it. No problem. Okay. But after that, it's all about skills and experience. So Charles, take the time right now to investigate your skills against what the marketplace is demanding. Everybody's heard me talk about this a lot. I call it a heat check. Okay. You're checking how you match up against the industry. So if you've then identified what type of job you want, you've started to identify people in that role and see how they built up their career and how they got to that point. Now you need to go look at the exact job descriptions for that role that you want to do. So go look at 15 to 20 of those and write down all of the skills that are required for those jobs. You might look at 15 or 20 jobs and there's 30 skills that are listed across all of them, you know, that not consistent with every single one, but like you see this thing mentioned, you know, in at least one of the job descriptions. Now you've got a list of 30 different skills. Okay. Next column over, write down what skills do you actually have? Do you actually have this skill in a tangible way? Is it something you could include on your resume? Do you have the skill refined and worked at? If you don't have those skills, Charles, I'm begging you. Those are the skills, those are your gaps. Those are why you're not drawing interest. Those are why people aren't noticing you. You don't have the skills that they need to do the job that you want. Look at the jobs you are applying for. Do you have the right skills for that job? And if you don't, you're not going to even register on the applicant tracking system. They're not even going to see you. The computer is going to scan your resume and say, this person doesn't have the profile of what we need. Okay. Which gets me to my next point. You need to customize every single resume to the job you apply for. When people start to get flustered in their job search, they're a year or 2 years into it, they think the way to improve their results is to up their applications. And that is false. False, false, false. You think if you up your activity level, you'll increase your chances of success. That is incorrect. I'll say it again. False, false, false. What you need to do is put more individual effort into each one that fits you. Okay? You find a job that interests you and really fits who you can be and want to be and is on aligned with who you think you are. Okay? And you customize that resume. You make it hit all the notes that they're saying in their job description that they want. You make it sing, okay? It's you customize your cover letter to this job. You put in that effort. It's not about doing 20 a day. It's about doing two really well. Really, really, really well, okay? Okay, last point I want to make. You need to get really aggressive in your networking, okay? What I mean by this is when you identify, and that's why I started out with identifying your role. Who do you want to be? What do you want to be? You've gone through LinkedIn. You've found 15 or 20 people that are doing this exact job. Reach out to them. Reach out to them. I'm Charles. I'm getting my master's right now, or I finished my master's. I really want to be an assistant athletic director someday. I know you've been doing it for the last 7 years. I'd love to connect with you and pick your brain from here and there. Start to build a relationship with somebody. Start to have intelligent dialogue. Start to talk about what you're studying, what you're learning, these sort of things. Don't go on too crazy. Don't go on forever. Okay, I get all these LinkedIn messages that are like 15 paragraphs long. It's a big commitment. Start to make a short and snappy dialogue back and forth with people. Start to build a relationship. Start to learn about other things that are going on out there, because your application and resume is going to stand out a lot more if it comes coupled with somebody in the building who can recommend you, or that knows somebody here or that knows somebody there, and you can start to get that building out. Be aggressive in your networking. Anybody who's been a guest on the Work in Sports podcast who aligns with what you want to do, you should reach out to today and say, hey, I heard you on the Work in Sports podcast. Love that interview. I also dream of being an assistant athletic director someday. Would love to connect with you here. Like, these are the things you need to be doing. It's your activity level, not just quantity, your smart in activity level that's going to make an impact here. Take your job search wider, you know, and try to think about those other roles that may fit you, that get you to your ultimate goal, but that aren't just, you know, they might not be as obvious. Be a little bit creative. Customize that resume. And finally, my last point is, don't be afraid to invest in your resume. There are some really great resume writing companies out there. I'm not the greatest resume writer. I know what techniques and strategies work. I know what I like when I read it. I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, send me your resume and I can critique it for you. That's not what I do. All right. I could probably do it, but it's not really what I'm going to want to do. just being honest, I don't like reading resumes. If there are companies that do this, this is their specialty. This is what they do day in and day out. So be willing to invest in your resume too. Maybe you get one copy that is like, this is the ideal resume that I've had created for me. And then for each time that you apply for a job, you tweak it a little bit. You move some things up. You add in a couple bullet points. You change a little bit of the look here and there based on what the job is and what it requires. It's all just trying to make your individual applications as perfect as they can be. All right, I think this is a pretty long episode since I went on my rant about Antonio Brown and our whole status as a sports culture. It is a interesting time where you question yourself in a lot of different ways. And, you know, it's almost like you get stuck in the middle of, I want to give people a second chance. I want to be accommodating for people to grow and change. But I also have to be willing to say, I'm not going to be a hypocrite and cheer for somebody who I think is, because I'm not there, I don't know the person, but there's enough data to say this could be a fundamentally bad person. Okay. It's a tough one to have. It's a tough conversation, but I'm glad we can have it here. And I'm glad you guys keep tuning in, and I'm glad that you listen the whole way through and engage with me in all the different forums that you can. So thank you again, everybody. I'll be back on Wednesday with another episode, and it's time to get back to work. Good luck out there, Charles.